the dean continued to say that Europe has an enormous radical problem. And according to Howard Dean, the radicals are the conservatives who are in opposition to Islam. Then he says, I think ISIS is a cult. It's not an Islamic cult. I think it's a cult. So the Islamic State is not an Islamic cult. I think ISIS is a cult, not an Islamic cult. I think it's a cult. You know, this was a guy that was very close to being president of the United States. This was a guy that was head of the Democratic Party. And how can you be so stupid as to say, and I know that the Hillary Rotten Clinton said it, I know that the Obaminator said it, but, you know, their souls are so far lost, they couldn't be found with a searchlight. And now you've got Howard Dean saying that the Islamic State is not Islamic, and that's because it's his opinion. His opinion is the Islamic State is not Islamic, it's a cult. And not an Islamic cult.
Right. Now, that's obviously such convoluted mental self-abuse that tortures both language and logic. And it just shows you that Howard Dean is a manipulative, wimpy word weasel who likely knows nothing of the Quran, but is more interested in manipulating large numbers of ignorant Muslims than in drawing attention to the accuracy of doctrine followed by the violent Muslims.
Yeah, that's. I think it's a part of the mantra of political correctness to be wholly incorrect. And the only way that you can promote political correctness is to be wholly incorrect. And Howard Dean is the new poster child. It says the journalist targeted in Wednesday's attack worked for a satirical publication known for lampooning the prophet Muhammad. Well, Muhammad was not a prophet. And they were known for criticizing every religion as well as every conservative throughout the world. Their axe came down at every religion and every conservative. A video shot from nearby captured one attacker shouting in French as they avenged the prophet. They were clear as to who they were. They were clear as to why they were killing. And they didn't act alone. It's not like you've got three guys, you know, just acting independently. The publication was firebombed several years ago. They received hundreds upon hundreds of death threats. And they're following exactly in the footsteps of what happened when the Norwegian newspaper published the cartoon of Muhammad. And they're following in exactly the footsteps of what Muhammad himself did. If Howard Dean wasn't such an immoral, ignorant boob and had read anything about Islam, he would know that Muhammad did the same thing, that he hunted down and killed those who satirized him in poems.
But he doesn't want you to, Howard Dean doesn't want anybody to know that. And, you know, so don't listen to them, listen to Howard. And I wanted to say one more thing before I have to go here. From the stuff you were saying two breaks back when going into the break about the necessity of challenging those who would kill those who say things that they don't like.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I might tend to agree with that. However, with a caveat or a stipulation that when one does so, one should know the job is dangerous, you know, when he takes it. And that's the difference between the people at Charlie Hebdo and the founding fathers who signed the Declaration of Independence, pledging their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor, and many of them losing their lives and fortunes, but they knew they were at risk for that when they went into it. And I'm fairly convinced that the people at Charlie Hebdo had not fully counted the cost of what they were doing.
That's possible, although Charb himself was very open about the fact he said, I'd rather die standing than I would live on my knees. I think he was an exception. I'm not sure that those who worked with him were an exception. but he was an exception. I'm not sure that he really understood much of Islam. I think he was pretty superficial in his activities. You know, if he had justified presenting a naked Muhammad because Muhammad was known to be a pedophile and rapist, then I think that then it's appropriate if you present it with evidence that affirms that your depiction is accurate. I don't think he ever tried to go below beneath the surface. So, but to some degree, I think he knew that what he was doing was dangerous.
They have police and his bodyguards, which indicates to some degree
When I wrote Prophet of Doom and Tea with Terrorists, I was fully aware of the fatwa against Salman Rushdie. I ended up having fatwas issued against me. I received the 1,000 or so death threats. I was fully aware of the danger, and yet I put my own name on the cover of the book. And it was my way of saying I recognize the danger. But the truth is more valuable than my life.
Yes, but we have the examples of Daniel, live forever, O king, in the lion's den, and of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the furnace. You know, we know, you know, that our God is alive and can do something to protect us.
Right. You know, I've realized that if I was doing something that Yahweh thought was worthy, and was willing to be reliant on him and consistent with his attitude towards approaching religious malfeasance, that to the degree that I was dependent and willing and reliant and trusting, that I would be protected. So I never, ever considered myself a danger.
They would
hurry me into becoming a seven-dimensional construct, living directly in Yahweh's presence and going off and exploring the universe, having a grand old time with fellow covenant members. They would hurry me to that reality, and I don't mind that. I mean, I think there's unfinished work to do here. I'm happy to be here and to continue to pursue his work. But the worst thing they can do is to kill me. Now there was something they could do. There was something they could do that was far worse to me, and that was the one thing that I negotiated with Yahweh. I mean, I said I want my family protected. So
that's Lois Lane and Jimmy, you know.
Exactly. I said, you know, I never asked for personal protection. I got it. I didn't ask for it, but I got it. I did ask for protection of my family, and I received that as a condition for doing this. You know, Muslims are deadly. It's a horrible, horrible disease. But there is something worse than being a mass murdering Muslim, and that's being someone like Howard Dean that lies on their behalf, that deceives people on behalf of this disgusting, this deadly, this destructive, this deceitful dogma, that when you're like Howard Dean and you're lying on behalf of the religion, you enable it. You create the environment where Muslims can continue to kill without impunity, and they will do so. You are aiding and abetting terrorism. You're the worst and most vile of people in the world is the Howard Deans. Is far more vile, far more immoral.
That's what I was going to use. Yeah, vile obfuscator. Deliberate muddier of the waters. And God is not the author of confusion, but Howard Dean is.
Yes, and I think that what Howard Dean did is far worse than what the Muslims did in that building. There is something worse than killing 20 or 12 people and wounding 20. There is something worse than murdering 12 people. And that is deceiving on behalf of a religion that has murdered hundreds of millions and will continue to kill hundreds of millions. And we need to hold the Howard Deans of the world accountable for their vile immorality, their repulsive ignorance. Well, Glenn, I want to thank you. I know you need to run. And I'm going to change subjects here just as soon as I finish this one article. Dean, the former Vermont governor and presidential candidate, said they still should be accorded, they should not be accorded any particular religious respect, whatever they're claiming their motivation is. It's clearly a twisted cultish mind. All religion is twisted. All religions are cults. I mean, Christianity is the cult of Paul. You know, rabbinical Judaism is the cult of Akiba. Islam is the cult of Muhammad. Each of these religions grew out of the twisted mind of either Paul, Akiba, or Muhammad. But that's the motivation. People are susceptible to believing such nonsense. It's the basis of religions. Dean is hardly the first public figure to try to separate modern-day Muslim extremists from the religion of Islam. In September, Secretary of State John Kerry insisted during a congressional hearing that Islamic State does not represent Islam. And the fact of the matter is, it's unbelievably stupid to do that. There is not an extreme Quran. There's not a Quran for moderate Muslims and a Quran for extreme Muslims. There's not a different set of hadith for extreme Muslims and a separate hadith for moderate Muslims. There isn't a religious sect for moderate Muslims and a religious sect for extreme Muslims. There isn't a Muhammad for extreme Muslims and a different Muhammad for moderate Muslims. There aren't two different depictions of Allah. One is a loving, peaceful God and the other as a jihad-sponsoring terrorist. There's only one. The depiction of Allah is always as a terrorist, as someone who uses torture and fear to manipulate. Wholly and completely tyrannical. It's the only depiction of Allah. There is none other. There's only one depiction of Muhammad. Mean-spirited, covetous, terrorizing, raping. That's the only depiction of him. There's not multiple depictions of them. You cannot separate modern-day Muslim extremists from the religion of Islam. That is what Islam is. Islam is nothing more than Muhammad. It is Muhammad's words and deeds. Full stop. Muhammad was a terrorist. Muhammad was a rapist. Muhammad was a pedophile. Muhammad was a thief. He was a mass murderer. That's why Muslims act that way today. Howard Dean called them, now he's having a tough time describing them, but he called them a militant cult masquerading as a religious movement, as opposed to the religious movement inspiring militant cults. And he's got the cart before the horse here. After using the phrase Islamic radical groups, he immediately corrected himself. Islamic is the wrong word. Radical religious extremists, he clarified. Oh boy, we're going to have radical and extremists in the same sentence. Radical and extremists, when they're actually fundamentalists. And so here's a man who is either wholly ignorant of the topic he is discussing, and therefore shouldn't be discussing it on a news program, or he is completely dishonest and is lying, and therefore should not be given access to a news program. That Islamic is the only word to describe them. They're all Muslims. That's the one thing they all have in common. While Obama and top officials and administrators referred to the Paris attack Wednesday as terrorism, they generally did not use the term Islamic terrorism. That attack was a terrorist attack. It's an armed group of militants attacking unarmed civilians. Classic terrorism is a tactic that did not make them terrorists. It just means the tactic they deployed was terrorism. They were Muslims. Steve Emerson, director of the Investigative Project on Terrorism, criticized officials for avoiding the term. He says, the bottom line here, these are Islamic terrorist attack, and they need to be called as such, he told Fox News on Wednesday. He would be correct. There are Islamic terrorist attacks. The Islamic State is Islamic. Boko Haram is Islamic. Hamas is Islamic. The PLO is Islamic. Al-Nusra is Islamic. Hezbollah is Islamic. Al-Qaeda is Islamic. Abu Sayyaf is Islamic. They're all Islamic. That's the only common denominator, and they are all doing exactly what Muhammad did. Now, turning to another deceiver, a man who created a religious cult, Paul, in 1 Corinthians 11, 20 and 21, Paul tells those who have joined his assembly not to participate in Passover, which is the ultimate plague of death, and not to drink wine in association with it, which thereby nullifies the symbolism associated with the blood of the Passover lamb. There's only one means to eternal life. It's Passover. There's only one means to vindication. It's matzah on yeasted bread. There's only one means to adoption into Yahweh's family. It's Bukurim. There's only one means to enrichment and empowerment as Yahweh's children, and it's Shavua, the promise of the Sabbath. Paul denounced them. If you do not answer Yahweh's invitation to meet with him on these days, if you do not embrace the meaning and benefit of these days, you have no hope of life eternal, no hope of salvation, no hope of adoption into Yahweh's family, no hope of engaging in a relationship with him, no hope of being empowered or enriched by God. And of course, Paul nullified the covenant, which is the institution for which these benefits were created, creating instead a replacement covenant, which he called his new covenant, his new testament, which he wholly differentiated between it and the existing one. Plague of death. Passover is the only means to life eternal in Yahweh's company and his family. If you negate Passover as he did in 1 Corinthians 11, 20 and 21, you are promoting the plague of death. Treacherous betrayal of Yahweh's instructions regarding the narrow path that he provided to salvation. Attacking the core of Yahweh's plan is the epitome of presumptuousness and immorality. Those who ascribe to such moral turpitude die. If you are not celebrating Passover, you're a dead man walking. If you're observing Passover but not capitalizing on matzah, you're in even a worse position, because now you will be immortal but eternally separated from God. Those who promote such deviance, such treachery, will find themselves in Sheol along with Shaul. And yet, Pauline doctrine is popular, providing for those who are open to it man's broadest path to destruction. Yahusha will differentiate this same immensely popular and broad path from the Torah in his instruction on the Mount, revealing that religious affiliations lead to death and the destruction of one's soul. Meaning to speak for God, Paul promises the gift of life. But his religion, the most popular ever conceived, according to God, is actually the plague of death. Paul promises heavenly rewards to those who place their faith in his gospel of grace. And yet, those intoxicated by this myth, according to God, will find absolutely no satisfaction or contentment. They will remain estranged from God because, like Yahweh's assurances in the Torah, or unlike them, Paul's hollow promises will go unfulfilled. Yahweh's promises in the Torah, he honored. He fulfilled them. Paul's promises are hollow. They're unreliable. And that means that the people Paul claimed as his own, the Gentiles, individuals from many different races and places, will suffer the consequence of his New Testament. Estranged from God, their souls perishing. Mass murder, the plague of death. Even if Paul had not been condemned by name with the mention of the Gentiles or the ethnos races in Pauline parlance, Rabbis Akiba and Maimonides were eliminated from the potential list of contentious culprits. Not that that isn't already obvious. These religious stalwarts corrupted Yahudim, not Goyim. Pauline doctrine has influenced more people in more places in this world than any other corruption of Yahweh's testimony. And the means to this madness is consistent with Yahweh's prophecy, and that Paul inferred that God had authorized him to alter the requirements upon which Yahweh had already taken his stand. Paul, like Satan before him in the garden, shortchanged Yah's testimony, removing it and his directions from their context to beguile individuals into believing that God had instituted the changes. Every time Paul quotes Yahweh, it is always a terse reference which is lifted as an object of scorn to ridicule the Torah, most often with those elusive references serving as cliches, simple adages, which are easy to articulate and remember. In spite of this, and even though Saul, its given name Shaul means question him, nary a Christian considers the irresolvable conflicts between Paul's letters and God's word. So while the following continues to identify the culprit, most Christians remain oblivious to Yahweh's prophecy regarding them and him. God says through the prophet Chabaouk, they do not ask questions, any of them, about him. Terse references to the word they lift up as taunts to ridicule, along with elusive sayings and mocking interpretations. They use simplistic and contrived equivalencies, often which are easy to remember, cliches and adages, which become bywords with implied associations that go well beyond what is true, to mock, to exercise dominion through counterfeit. Along with their elusive sayings and mocking interpretations, derisive words wrapped in enigmas, arrogantly spoken. There are hard and perplexing questions which need to be asked of him. Difficult enigmas to be solved, dark and hidden secrets, double dealings regarding him. Moreover, they should say, woe to the one who claims to be great, so as to increase his offspring, acting like a rabbi, when neither apply to him. For how long will they make pledges based upon his significance? Chabaouk 2:6. Hard and perplexing questions which need to be asked of him. You know, if you ask the hard questions about Paul, he always comes up lacking. You can't question Pauline doctrine and leave unscathed. And Paul is the one who claimed to be the father of his faithful. Claimed to be, said, I'm the father of the faithful. He claimed to be a rabbi. And neither apply to him according to God. And for how long will they make pledges based upon his significance? You know, the reality is most Christians make their pledges based upon what Paul wrote. And then if you look at the defense of Paul, it's always, universally, in Paul's letters and in those who support him. Terse references, that means truncated references to the word, they lift up as taunts to ridicule, simplistic, contrived equivalencies, counterfeits, bywords, and elusive sayings, mocking interpretations, spoken arrogantly. The basis of Pauline doctrine is how it's justified. It's It's the basis of this plague of death. Paul dismissed all those who would dare question him, claiming that by doing so they were opposed to God, and he invoked an eternal torment and condemnation upon anyone who would so much as change a nuance of his mantra. He called them satanic when the opposite was true. And speaking of truth, the reason religious belief systems like Christianity are adverse to questions is because those who question lose their faith. The Quran is really open in this regard. The fifth surah of the Quran, which is the last surah to be revealed, spoke of Muslims who questioned Islam. They questioned the Quran. And it says that they lost their faith as a result. Anybody who would read the Quran, who is aware of what the Torah says, who is aware of who Yahweh is, who is aware of human history, who is aware of anything scientifically relevant, who has an actual sense of morality, anyone who would read the Quran under that basis, from that perspective, would not just question Islam, they'll reject it. The same thing is true of Pauline Christianity. Well, Paul is not as stupid as Muhammad historically. He is not as stupid as and errant as Muhammad was scientifically. Both were false prophets. The few prophecies that either of them issued, they got wrong. And both were ruthless by their own admission. Both were demon-possessed by their own admission. Both were insane. Both were stunningly egotistical. Both were internally contradictory. When someone's internally contradictory, you know they're lying. It's not hard to figure out if you'll do what God has asked and question Him. Well, now at least you know why the book was called Questioning Paul. It's not my idea, it's God's. Why don't they question him? And he's named him as Shaul. Question Shaul. Purpose of this whole prophecy, most important ever issued. Now, this next statement is associated with the previous prediction. It is rendered from the Dead Sea Scrolls, because the Qumran text differs considerably from the Masoretic. It says, "And he loads himself down with thick mud." He burdens himself with thick, dark, and wicked mud, dirt, and dust to be swept away. God is saying that the only thing weighty and significant about Paul is that he has covered himself and others in muck. It's God also saying, you know, when he hears the prayers of those who are not, or when people pray who are not Torah observant, that he sees them covered in muck. Yeah, it's true. That's what God sees the religious. Weighted down and covered in muck. Religious is like a swamp, is like a cesspool. It sucks you in and covers you in muck. But I think Yah is also poking fun at Paul's murky and messy prose. You know, Paul's letters are so badly written. We cannot say that we were not warned or advised. God even told us how to respond to this horrible individual, Paul. He wants us to stand up against all forms of corruption, political, religious, military, and economic. We are to confront lies and liars. So he says, so why not, quickly, for a short period of time, rise up and take a stand? And those of you who are bitten and are making payments to him, wake up from your stupor, moving away in fear of him, because you will be considered plunder, victimized by them. That's what God wants you to do. Stand up. Rise up, take a stand, oppose human institutions, these kinds of institutionalized religious evils. And those who are bitten by this venomous serpent of a man and his demonic spirit and who are providing money. I mean, look at the largest charities in the world are Christian. They're making payments to him. Wake up from your stupor. God says you're in a stupor. Wake up. Become more aware. Move away from him. Dread him. Abhor him. Don't be vexed by him. Because you will be considered plunder and victimized. And that's truth. Paul, Satan, his dark spirit friend, preyed on human souls, plundering them of their souls, victimizing them. It's interesting that only Paul, among all of those who claim to speak for God, solicits money. And he does constantly. It is why Christian clerics embrace him. So following his example, his instructions, Christian institutions have made merchandise of men. And worst among them has been the Roman Catholic Church. Yahweh is trying to awaken its victims before it is too late. And that because there is a consequence. And we're going to speak about that consequence and what Yahweh has to say in Chabaouk Habakkuk 2:8 when we return for the last segment of Shattering Myths for today. Speaking of the religion that Paul inspired, it says, because you have plundered, stealing the possessions of an enormous number of Gentiles, they shall loot and victimize all of the remaining nations by means of the blood of humankind, and also through violent and cruel destruction forces terrorizing the land and, yeah, city, even all of those living in her. Oh, boy, you speak of Christianity. And how, under the inspiration of Theodosius I to impose Christianity on Rome, he turned all of the population of Europe into serfs, into slaves for the religious establishment. They took people as plunder. And then you look at the death, the number of people that were killed as a result of Pauline Christianity, particularly hunting down and killing Jews. It's stunningly egregious. And it was Gentiles hunting down, looting, victimizing Jews. The blood of humankind stains Christianity through violent and destructive forces threatening the land. Where did they attack first? The Roman Empire. Israel. Not once, but twice. Israel. You know, this was their first attack at Israel was long after Paul had written all of his letters. The second attack was, 100 years later. Plundering Israel. Even today, Christians are opposed to Yah City, Jerusalem. They prefer to have their glorious city be in Rome, honoring the beast that was there. And they would applaud Muslims when they terrorize Israel. They're willing to reward them to make certain that they have their own state so they can have more weapons, providing them with billions of dollars worth of aid, honoring the Islamic terrorists who would seek to destroy Israel with statehood, with accolades, with weapons, with billions of dollars of funds, creating a proxy because they despise Jerusalem. Jerusalem. Because they despise Israel, Israel. Because they despise Yahudim, Jews. It's Paul who begins this merciless attack against Jews throughout his letters, making them the enemy of his new religion, thereby creating the anti-Semitism that ultimately took root in the Christian church. Paul, a Roman citizen, seeded the hatred of God's chosen people that boiled over 70 years later with the destruction of Israel and Jerusalem by the empire's legions. it happened just as Yahweh predicted it would. 700 years from the time this prophecy was committed to writing, Jerusalem was sacked, Israel was salted, and those not murdered by Rome were hauled away as property into slavery. According to Yahweh, to be cut off from him is to be estranged from the covenant, thereby excluded from this relationship and forsaken, which is to be damned. Therefore, you do not want God to say of you what he said of Paul. Woe to the one who is cut off, coveting, while wickedly soliciting ill-gotten gain, in relation to him setting his house and temple in association with the heights of heaven, so as to spare the acquired property and possessions from the paws of fellow countrymen. Yes, Paul and those who follow him are cut off. They're covetous. They're wicked. They have solicited ill-gotten gain. Look at the Roman Catholic Church. They have set their house and temple in association with the heights of heaven. That's Rome, the holy city. Look what they've done. All to acquire the world's property and possessions. It's difficult to know in this particular case as to the full implication of everything that God said here. The language is extraordinarily revealing and provides us with many ways to look at this statement. But all in all, Yahweh is consistent. He looks at those who promote religion as being covetous and of making merchandise with men. We'll be back tomorrow.